Hello, folks, and welcome to the 50th podcast edition of Weber's Whipping Post, coming to you from sunny Arizona. Can't believe it's been 50 already. I'm Weber, and I'm delighted you tuned in to listen. Today's podcast is called Outlaw Anti-Gun Groups. Biden, I researched his numbers in the primaries already held and came away shaking my head. Do you realize Biden got 126,000 votes in South Carolina, another 113,000 in Nevada, 618,000 in Michigan, and 79,000 in New Hampshire? Are you kidding me? With our nation at stake, there are already almost a million people that are going to vote for the worst president we've ever had. And that's quite an achievement when one considers Obama and Carter compete for that same title. Biden should be in prison for treason, yet folks who are easily duped by the media will still vote for him, evidently regardless of how high grocery prices get. Did you see Mitch McConnell is finally stepping down as the minority leader of the Senate next November? Thank God the Kentucky Republican Rhino announced Wednesday the 28th this will be his last year as leader, although he will still be in the Senate until 2027. Methinks he picked November because he realizes Trump will win the election and skin Mitch alive for his federal status to China. McConnell is married to former Secretary of Transportation, Taiwanese-born Elaine Chao. McConnell has become one of the wealthiest senators while in office, worth more than $25 million, all on a senator's salary. Chao's father founded the Foremost Group, an American shipping company with shipping lanes between China and the U.S. Makes one wonder how she got appointed the Secretary of Transportation. In 2008, McConnell and Chao were gifted somewhere between $5 and $25 million, supposedly after the death of Chao's mother. This all seems just a tad too swampish to me. But there again, I'm from Chemance. Trump supporters repent. Bob Costas thinks we're all a toxic cult supporting a man that is the most disgraceful figure in modern presidential history. The loudmouth, narcissistic curmudgeon blubbered about this recently on CNN's Saturday morning show. And he is even mad at Biden for running for office, which means he might be risking plunging the country into insanity under Trump unless he steps aside to let a stronger candidate to run. The little bastard Costas jabbered on. You have to be in the throes of some sort of toxic delusion and in a toxic cult to believe that Donald Trump has ever been, in any sense, emotionally, psychologically, intellectually, or ethically fit to be president of the United States. And he thinks Biden was? Trump is a monster, he went on. You shouldn't send Biden out there at this point in his life to try and slay the dragon. You know, this should be expected of an outspoken sports announcer working for the likes of NBC, CNN, and TNT. He's also a proponent of gun control. Perhaps he should stick to jock sniffing. Hey, this podcast is brought to you by Hoffman Chiropractic Neurology, celebrating 30 years in practice. Dr. Hoffman specializes in general musculoskeletal conditions, neurology, sports injuries, acupuncture, electrodiagnostics, and comprehensive wellness management. Dr. Hoffman provides exceptional care for patients of all ages, from infants to elderly, from expectant moms to athletes. Dr. Hoffman's goal is to provide all patients with a tailored treatment plan based on an extensive history, a thorough exam, and x-rays. Contact Hoffman Chiropractic Neurology for more information or to schedule. That number is 815-937-0446. Well, here we go again. The government's threatening and the media is going orgasmic over a quote-unquote looming government shutdown. This damn report reminds me of Charlie Lucy in a football. How many times do they think we will fall for this? Those bastards in the swamp are not going to go 2 weeks without a paycheck, folks. Betsy Klein and Haley Talbert with CNN seem to be out front, exasperatingly speculating that Biden could be the first president to deliver a State of the Union address during a shutdown. It'd be about that interesting. Hell, he might be able to do it from his basement then. Why, according to those two wide-eyed reporters, we could be barreling toward a full shutdown. Would you believe, again, according to Betsy and Haley, that lawmakers remain deeply divided over a plan to keep the lights on with the clock ticking and no clear resolution in sight? I have to wonder if that is not the same line they use every time the government warns of us of this. This is where you should hold on to your seat, folks, as it gets more dire. The federal government will have run out of money, and this would have massive, their words, not mine, implications for the U.S. economy and national security. Time to start biting your nails, folks. It gets worse. Would you believe that, again, according to Maya McGinnis, president of the Nonpartisan Nonprofit Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. How's that for an oxymoron? This is the biggest speech in our country. Really, Maya? By Biden? A big speech? And from there, a White House official from the Biden crime spree said, and I quote, "The focus should be on House Republicans doing their job to keep the government open." So this is the Republicans' fault. If it weren't for the armed forces not getting paid, I'd vote to shut the damn thing down for a long period of time. They aren't doing a damn thing on our behalf, and it's costing us dearly for that ineptness. This should also point out that we need the armed services paid from a different entity in the future and let the government play their finger-pointing games on their own damn dime. Now, in full disclosure, I read something like the following segment decades ago. I remember the theme of this story so well, although not many details, that I thought I would repeat it to you in my own words all these years later. It's truly a remarkable story. It's told by a remarkable man, the late Paul Harvey. I was dumbfounded when I learned who Harvey was talking about. This is a story about Chris, who was born in 1936 in Brownsville, Texas. He is the son of a U.S. Army Air Corps officer who would eventually become an Air Force Major General. Chris graduated from San Mateo, California High School in 1944 and then enrolled at Pomona College. He wrote prize-winning essays that were published in the Atlantic Monthly while at Pomona. He appeared in the March 31st issue of Sports Illustrated for achievements in three sports. Graduated in 1958 with a BA degree, he also was summa cum laude in literature. In his junior year, he was elected Phi Beta Kappa. That same year, he was awarded a Rhodes Scholarship to the University of Oxford in England, where he was awarded for a stint as a boxer, and he played rugby. Chris graduated away with a Bachelor of Philosophy degree in English Literature from Rhodes. Afterwards, he joined the U.S. Army, being commissioned a second lieutenant, eventually getting ranked up to captain. He was stationed in West Germany in the 8th Infantry Division. After his deployment in Germany, he was assigned to teach English Lit at West Point, an assignment he declined. Instead, he moved to Nashville to pursue his dream of writing novels and songs. He worked as a commercial helicopter pilot in Louisiana, where he would work for weeks before heading back to Nashville to promote his songwriting. Supposedly, he met June Carter and asked her to give her husband, Johnny, a tape of his material, which had just been thrown into a large pile. Weeks later, he would land a helicopter in Cash's front yard as a stunt to get his attention. Cash wasn't home at the time, but he eventually recorded one of the songs Chris had written while he was sitting on top of an oil platform. Cash's version would earn Chris Songwriter of the Year in 1970 by the Country Music Association Awards. You may have heard of the song called Sunday Morning Coming Down. By now, you may have figured out I'm speaking of Kris Kristofferson, the man who also wrote Me and Bobby McGee for the Good Times and helped me make it through the night. He was awarded a Golden Globe as Best Actor for his work in A Star is Born, one of my favorite movies. Bet you never knew the man who would write and record so many successful songs, acted in many major films, started the heavy group The Highwaymen, and was elected to the Country Hall of Fame with such an educated, brilliant soldier. He retired in January of 2021. I even found out something I didn't know. Kris briefly dated Janis Joplin, who would go on to record Kris's biggest hit, Me and Bobby McGee. Side note about Janis. She never knew the song became a hit, as she died of a heroin overdose before the album was released. After that moronic $355 million verdict by an imbecilic New York judge, Ingerman, against Trump, there has been some well-received backlash to the state of New York. Shark Tank investor Kevin O'Leary called the state a loser and vowed to no longer invest in the state, a move others agreed with. O'Leary also cited the state's policies, high taxes, and uncompetitive regulation as reasons businesses are moving to Florida and Texas. More than 160 Wall Street firms have vacated their headquarters from New York just since 2019, costing New York City an estimated $1 trillion. Have to wonder if Mayor Eric Adams realizes this. You may recall this was a victimless crime for overstating some of the property, as no one involved was hurt and everyone got what they bargained for. Overstating property is not that uncommon, folks. O'Leary said, "Who is the victim? It's just some arbitrary decision by the judge." He also wondered why the New York bar has not questioned the ruling. "It is my opinion that the ruling will be struck down by the next court." There was also talk about a potential truck strike boycotting deliveries into or out of New York City that did not come about. If you're wondering if my company would have boycotted New York City, the answer is no. We have responsibilities to our drivers and certain long-term customers. Speaking of Trump, there is a GoFundMe page set up by Elena Cardone to help Trump with his civil fraud fine. As of February 16th, it had raised $1,281,230. Things are starting to look up for the Republican Party. Committee Chairwoman Rona McDaniel is finally going to resign effective March 5th. This came about a few weeks after Trump called for her resignation in favor of North Carolina GOP Chair Michael Whatley. Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura, also wants their job, but the media would be more than likely Laura also wants the job, but the media would more than likely crucify her. Trump nominated Daniels in 2016, but under her guidance, the GOP has not fared that well. I don't know much about the people that would like to take her place, but one wonders if they could do any worse. McDaniel was paid a salary of $400,000. But her salary didn't match her success as the GOP lost elections and seats they shouldn't have. I would have preferred the GOP elected Harmeet Dillon and hope Trump considers her as a replacement. Dillon regularly appeared on Tucker Carlson, coming across as a hardworking, knowledgeable lawyer who would get the job done. Have you paid any attention to the jailing of former FBI informant Alexander Smirnov? He's sitting in prison with no bail for allegedly lying to the FBI about the Biden's business. Seems this would be like the kettle calling the pot black, as I'm sure the FBI has been lying to us daily since their inception. Plus, we know Hunter Biden is a scofflaw. As proof of my last statement, look at the FBI's malfeasance in the Russia hoax, the Trump impeachments, or Hunter's laptop. I'm not sure exactly where the stink is emanating, folks, but there very well may be some wafting up against some wafting up again from the swamp with this issue. Sometimes you just have a hunch. Smirnoff evidently reported to the FBI that Dad and Lad Biden were paid millions of dollars by a Ukrainian businessman for helping get rid of a Ukrainian prosecutor from investigating Burisma, the company of which Hunter Biden sat on their board. Now wait, didn't Joe brag about getting the son of a bitch, his words, removed? Smirnoff was arrested in Las Vegas on February the 14th after a grand jury indicted him for making false statements. And the prosecutor on the case is none other than the DOJ's favorite hand puppet and lapdog, David Weiss. Smirnoff was originally allowed to be released with GPS monitoring, but then the government got another judge to deny bail. We now have to wonder if Smirnoff will commit an Epstein during his hiatus in prison and leave in a hearse. In his podcast, Dan Bongino went nuts over the handling of Smirnoff. He believes Smirnoff might be the domino that topples the entire Biden crime syndicate and must be silenced at any cost. There's more than we know about this here, folks. That I'm certain.
Weber's Whipping Post will be right back. A.N. Weber Incorporated is a proud sponsor of Weber's Whipping Post. Now in their 76th year, Weber has offices in Kankakee, Illinois, Nashville, Tennessee, El Paso, Texas, and Chandler, Arizona. Whether you're looking for company equipment to haul your dry van or flatbed freight, or logistics services for all types of freight, or even a career in driving, maintenance, or sales, call Mark Tedford at 815-939-2235. You can also apply online at anweber.com. Weber has immediate openings for drivers in all areas and mechanical technicians in Kankakee, Illinois, and El Paso, Texas. Weber is also looking for logistics agents across the country. Again, call Mark Tedford at 815-939-2235 or apply online at anweber.com. And now, back to Weber's Whipping Post.
You ever wonder what the net worth of the top rockers in the world are? Well, I do. And since this is my podcast, I'm going to now impart that wisdom on you. Weighing in at numero uno is former Beatle, former Wings bass player, Sir Paul McCartney. Paul is worth $1.2 billion, and his well of song here just never seems to run dry. Surprisingly, Bono from the band U2 comes in second at about $700 million. His musical well of hits ran dry years ago, but now he has a steady gig in Vegas. Fellow left-leaner Bruce Springsteen is right behind him at $650 million. That's $1.35 billion between them. They could donate an awful lot of charities with all that money. Elton John just retired and took his $650 million with him. Fellow Englishman Gordon Sumner, known as Sting, has about $550 million from hawking bad music, both solo and with the band The Police. Suffice to say, I have no Sting or Police music on my legendary Spotify list. Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger, and Keith Richards are all worth $500 million each. That surprised me, as I thought they'd all be worth more. So get this. Thomas Creech was to be executed in Idaho for murdering five people in serial killer fashion last week. Creech was one of the longest-serving death row inmates in U.S. history, in prison since 1974, 49 years ago. He shot John Bradford and Ed Arnold when they picked him up hitchhiking. While in prison, he murdered inmate David Jensen, a disabled car thief, in 1981. These are the murders they know about, although they think there is more. The reason he wasn't executed? They couldn't get the IV into his arm. They could have hired a nurse to come in and take care of that business. This just smacks of dereliction of duty and a drain on taxpayer money. 49 years we've been paying for him to rot in prison. Here's some facts about the King Elvis Presley songs He recorded over 600 songs and sold over 600 million records and didn't write any of them. The King of Rock had top talented writers who helped him with his hit singles. Aaron Schroeder wrote 16 songs, six of which reached the top 25 and four of which reached number one. Unfortunately, he stopped writing for Elvis because of a legal battle in 1962. Otis Blackwell wrote 10 songs for Elvis, including All Shook Up and Return to Sender. Ironically, Otis never met Elvis. Hall of Famers Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller wrote 23 songs for Elvis, including the number one, Jailhouse Rock. They also wrote Kansas City and Hound Dog. And believe it or not, Mac Davis wrote songs for Elvis. This is the same guy that wrote Baby Baby, Don't Get Hooked on Me. He wrote In the Ghetto and Don't Cry Daddy for Elvis. Then comes Bob Wiseman, who wrote more than 50 songs for Elvis, more than any other writer. Many were for Elvis's soundtrack, such as Blue Hawaii and Rockahula Baby. Elvis's biggest hit was Can't Help Falling in Love and written by Hugo Peretti, Luigi Kreider, and George Weiss. My favorite Elvis song, If I Can Dream, was written by Walter Brown. Okay, that's enough about Elvis. It would appear Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin doesn't feel he has to answer to anybody in Washington. The man has been sick with prostate cancer. I'll give him that, but damn, just leave for the critical care unit at the hospital and not tell anybody last January is, as they say about putts and golf, out of the realm of friendship. Last Thursday, they hauled Austin and his bad prostate before Congress to chew on his ass. Said Representative Jim Banks from Indiana, our adversaries should fear us and you have embarrassed us. At one point, they asked Austin if Biden was just aloof to our national defense, but it was Austin irrelevant, which, of course, Austin denied both claims. He did admit he didn't handle the situation right and apologized. Big deal. Reps remind him that there was a war going on in the Middle East. Given what is already going on with that Cuban nut job Mayorkas over at Homeland Security, adding this ridiculous disappearing act by Austin, one has to wonder if there's anyone in charge in the swamp. Speaking of embarrassment, an Illinois judge, probably prodded by Governor Toilet Spritzker, removed Trump from the ballot for the alleged but not proven January 6th protest. This ruling from the former traffic court judge, Tracy Porter, comes just in time for the March 19th vote. As you know, the Supreme Court has struck down Colorado's ban on Trump being on the ballot. So I would imagine Maine and Illinois are soon going to be told to pound sand. But hey, Porter got her 15 minutes of fame, and in the progress, yet again, embarrassed Illinoisans. The audiobook edition of my novel, Roll Me Away, is getting closer, I think. They sent me a rough draft to listen to, but I rejected it because I didn't like the voice on the female parts. So it's back to the editing department, which will probably delay its release another 2 to 3 weeks. Next week, and the 8th and 9th of March, Don and I will be at the University of Arizona in Tucson to promote the book further. I'm pretty stoked about this. Now for last week's commentary, Don't Outlaw Guns, Outlaw Anti-Gun Groups. After being shot at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl parade, the poor Lisa Lopez Galvin had not been buried yet, nor the family time to grieve before anti-gun zealots stomped all over her memory. The mother of two was the only person to die in the melee, although at least 22 other innocent people were harmed. As of the time of this podcast, there have been three people arrested, one since released, and two kids charged. It appears the gun violence was a result of a dispute and, in my mind, bad parenting. The anti-gun organization known as March for Our Lives was out quickly doing a great deal of the stomping. This is a student-led organization which promotes demonstrations in support of gun control while the rest of us are out working. MFOL began shouting that the shooting was depressingly American. The group claims to be young activists promoting civic engagement, education, and direct action by youth to eliminate the epidemic of gun violence. Epidemic of gun violence. Did you know on the day of the Kansas City shooting, there were 82,880,000 legal gun owners who owned 393 million guns that did not kill anybody? Naturally, President Biden and Vice President Harris raced to a nearby microphone to move their pie holes to call on Congress to take guns away from the nearly 83 million legal gun owners who harm nobody. A script was stuck under Biden's nose for him to read and mumble, "The epidemic of gun violence is ripping apart families and communities every day. It is unacceptable. We have to decide who we are as a country." Just before jetting off to Germany to waste more taxpayer dollars, Vice President Harris's assigned talking point was that another day where America has experienced senseless gun violence. If only Congress had the courage to act responsibly. No word on whether she giggled afterwards. Had politicians not gutted the country's mental health system, these shootings would not be so prevalent. If armed veterans were installed in the schools and churches to stand guard, these shootings would not be so common either. Put a student's grandfather in charge of security and see what happens to a derelict that wants to shoot up his grandchild's school. Perhaps these students should learn their history first before shooting off their mouths, and politicians should be reminded before they take office of what lies in wait for citizens that have been disarmed. In 1911, Turkey disarmed citizens and then promptly murdered 1.5 million Armenians between 1915 and 1917. In 1929, Stalin also disarmed Russians, then killed 20 million of them between 1929 and 1953. The Chinese disarmed their populace in 1935 and then slaughtered 20 million civilians. Not to be outdone, Hitler disarmed the Germans in 1938 before executing 16 million Jews over 6 years, thus beating Russia's time frame. Cambodia killed 1 million educated people in 1956. Guatemala murdered 100,000 Mayan Indians in 1964. In Uganda, in 1970, massacred 300,000 Christians, all after disarming their citizens. It doesn't have to be the government killing unarmed citizens either. Weaponless populations are easy targets to criminals who don't care what laws the government dictates. After Australia disarmed its citizens due to one mass shooting, homicide rates went up, as did burglaries of seniors. Taking guns away from people does not lower crime, it increases it. Ever notice most gun crime happens in or near large cities that have Democrat politicians? Ironically, it is predominantly Democrat politicians that want to take guns away from citizens. Even people with Trump derangement syndrome should be against further gun control, particularly if fearing Trump wants to be a dictator. Disarmed citizens are most favorable to presidents wanting to become a dictator. So maybe you guys should vote for Trump. There are plenty of laws and bureaucracy involved with gun ownership. With every new law comes more paperwork for the government to keep on file so they know who is armed. That is not what our founding fathers had in mind when creating the Second Amendment. Don't believe there needs to be more gun control, folks. Our mental health system needs to be reestablished. Parents of juveniles committing gun violence should be held responsible with prison for at least 5 years. Tougher laws should be passed for those who are in possession of illegal firearms. Perhaps a 10-year sentence for being found in possession of a firearm that is not theirs, and hanging if killing a person with a gun that is not theirs. These actions will go a long way of stopping these random killing sprees, not taking the rights of law-abiding citizens. This was kind of funny. This is the one I'm going to leave you with. At the height of his popularity, Charlie Chaplin entered a Charlie Chaplin look-alike competition in San Francisco. He came in 20th place. This is a call out for sponsors. Hey, folks, have you ever thought about advertising your business on a podcast? At only $35 per episode, my podcast is an inexpensive way to get your product out before the public. So far, I have generated 7,000 downloads. Just email me at weber1957@gmail.com if you would like to sign up. You can write your own ad or I'll write it for you at no expense. That's all I got, folks. If you like this podcast, please tell others. Check out my blog at www.weber'swhippingpost.com. Thanks a million for listening. Bye now.